I'm Ross Reynolds. 30% more men went under the knife last year for cosmetic reasons than a decade ago. The numbers are on the rise, and what men are having done is changing, too. Joining me to talk about trends in plastic surgery, Dr. Phil Hake, a plastic surgeon here in the Northwest for 27 years, and he's former president of the American Society for Plastic Surgeons. Dr. Hake, welcome back. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Ross. Nice to see you again.
So nose jobs are the most common surgery for men, and I got a little plastic surgery on my nose this summer to restore my schnoz after a little cancerous growth was taken out of it. Are more men getting plastic surgery on the nose for reasons like mine, or are most of them getting plastic surgery so their noses look beautiful?
Well, it's a combination of breathing better and getting a more proportionate nose.
Hmm.
Having a very large nose on a refined face makes you look sort of unusual, and the function of our face is really to make us blend in into society. When you stand out because you've got a craggy feature and you know you can fix it, that's why men are getting their noses changed.
I guess I'm wondering if most of it is just for appearance, or is most of it because they want to get a divot that's taken out of their nose fixed?
Yeah, well, some of it's because you broke your nose as a kid, so yeah. Crooked noses get fixed, and the patient will say, well, while you're at it, doc, can you make it a little smaller? Can you make my tip look a little better? The danger, though, is getting a feminine nose on a male face, and so the surgeon has to be careful to make this new nose still look masculine and not feminine.
You know, I've never looked at a nose and said, that man has a feminine nose on it. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it gives the appearance of sort of a weak person.
Oh.
So a strong male has a strong nose. And you know, in our society, that's sort of accepted. You know, why do character actors stand out so much in Hollywood? It's because they've got unusual features. Not all of us want to look like a character actor.
No. Dr. Hake, did you see that news photo this week of something was going on in China where they were trying to grow a new nose and it was coming out of the guy's forehead? Did you see that picture?
Yeah, so that's
was astounding.
That's a phenomenal technique. We've used that same area of the forehead to rebuild noses, but I've never seen anybody build it on the actual forehead before they moved it down to the nose. So it's an advancement of an old technique.
And the question everybody was asking is, why did they grow the nose on his forehead instead of where his nose is?
Simple. It's blood supply. There's a very big artery coming out of your orbit that goes right up the middle of your forehead. And when they move that nose down onto where the nose used to be, that artery is going to feed all the tissue so it'll survive.
Now, you were also telling us that this nose surgery is the most common surgery for women as well, right?
Yeah, it's a little less common, breast surgery and liposuction. But yeah, a lot of women have nose surgery. And for them, it's a similar type of a thing to fit the size of their face and have some breathing or airway problems corrected at the same time.
Now, hair transplants were at one time on the list of top cosmetic surgeries done, but not so much anymore.
Well, bald is beautiful. You know, I think if you just walk around Seattle and look at the guys who are celebrating their baldness, those are the guys that used to pay a lot of money for hair transplants.
And those hair transplant guys are going,
yeah.
Wish that style would have got out.
It's just a more commonly accepted appearance for a guy to have short hair or no hair.
Who are the men who are coming in for cosmetic surgery? Could you characterize them in terms of demographics, mostly younger, mostly older?
It's mostly younger to early middle age for noses. For eyelid surgery, which is another very common choice for men, it's more people in their 50s and 60s. They want to look younger. It's clearly, I'm looking old, I'm looking tired, and I want to be a little more attractive and look a little more awake.
Now, I want to get back to something we've touched on before, but I think it's really important to remind people of it's getting gray out, it's getting dark out. A lot of people want a little bit of what they think is a rosy, pleasant, healthy look to their face. So they're going in to tanning salons.
Yes.
And you've got some strong feelings about that.
Very strong. So just four episodes of tanning on a tanning bed a year increase your risks for skin cancer by 40%. And it's the these new super tanning beds that have ultra-high ultraviolet light that are giving you a very, very concentrated dose. You'd have to be outside for days to get the amount of ultraviolet light that you're going to get in 5 minutes on a tanning bed these days. And so the problem is it doesn't cause skin cancer tomorrow. It's going to cause it years down the road. And so we're not going to see the effects on all our young people who are staying super tan until they're 10, 20, 30 years older, but I expect there'll be an epidemic.
Now, is that to say that if you are quite a bit older, you probably shouldn't worry about it because skin cancer wouldn't develop till you were after you were worried about it?
No, it's cumulative. You and I have both had skin cancer.
Right.
We're the same age.
Mm-hmm.
I got mine growing up as a kid on Lake Michigan with no protection for ultraviolet light. You were exposed yourself in the East. But it's a cumulative effect. So if you stop tanning now and are very careful on your vacations to avoid burning, it's those burns that lead to the cumulative effect.
Now, what are these super tanning beds? They're actually they have you on a more intense dose than an old style tanning bed?
Well, they're faster.
Yeah.
The intensity means that you don't have to lay there as long as you used to have to with the old beds. But, you know, this is a somewhat unregulated area, and I think we ought to have more common sense applied to this.
Well, there has been talk, because they're not, of banning tanning salons for people under a certain age. Do you think that's appropriate for the government to step in and say, no, if you're below 18, you can't go into one of these?
I think they should ban it for everybody, Ross.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that dangerous?
Yes. You know, there's now a tax on tanning beds, and that tax money is going to be used for research to further define if there is a certain type of person that's more susceptible to that ultraviolet light. So when I go on a vacation, I stay out of, you know, for instance, if I go to Hawaii, I stay out of the sun from 11 to 2. Ultraviolet A is there early in the morning and through the midday. Ultraviolet B starts at about 11, and it's the combination of A and B from 11 to 2 that'll burn you and lead to that cumulative risk for skin cancer. So I go back out after 2 or 3 and enjoy the beach.
You know, Dr. Hake, a lot of people this time of year might be putting away that suntan lotion and that sunscreen, thinking, oh, maybe get a couple of nice days this weekend, but I don't really need to worry about putting on sunscreen. Do you need to worry about that in the wintertime?
Well, I still see people from Alaska with skin cancer. And so maybe the ozone hole is worse than we've thought, and maybe we are still getting plenty of ultraviolet rays, even though you're not going to burn, in December and January here on those rare days.
So a couple of important lessons there. Beware the tanning bed. Dr. Hake thinks no one should use them. And also, just because it's wintertime doesn't mean you should not be using sunscreen and suntan lotion. Dr. Phil Hake, former president of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, and he's been practicing here in the Northwest for 27 years. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Ross.
This is The Record on KUOW.